365 days a year.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duvernay, your hosts, every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara, at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing today?
You know, one of the good things about COVID is that you don't have to feel bad if you have nothing to do because no one else has anything to do.
Did you used to feel bad about having nothing to do?
I did, but now I feel like I'm part of the group because no one's got anything on their agenda.
Right. You know, I have to say this is the first year where I'm actually ready for Christmas. I'm now just buying things to buy things, but Christmas is done, which is a good thing for me. I usually am doing it Christmas Eve. So,
well, I thought Christmas was done on the 25th. Is it that quick? Are we past the 25th? You said Christmas is done.
I know, but there's all the preparation for those of you who are non-celebratory ones.
Okay.
That takes time.
Speaking of celebrations, do we have a guest today?
We do. We have. It makes me hark back to the days of the delicious scallops at Sage and Onion. We have the owner of Duo Catering and Events, Ashley Transky, with us today. Thanks so much for being here, Ashley.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
By the way, before we get into the articles, I'm having dinner courtesy of Duo. I have to pick up my food. It's 4 o'clock. So we better make sure the show doesn't run over because I want Ashley to run back there and make sure my food is ready.
Oh, are you dropping them off at my house, Neil? How
nice. Yeah, I wanted to mention the two of you talking about having little to do. I'm finding myself working twice as hard during this pandemic than I ever was before.
And yeah, it's only Neil that doesn't have anything to do, just for the record. I'm busy.
Shooting staff and not enough hours in the day.
Yeah. Yes. So the first article is from the Wall Street Journal, and it's entitled High Speed Traders Race for an Edge. And there's a new technology for fiber optics, which is typically made of glass, but someone has developed a new hollow core fiber that is super, super, super fast, faster than typical fiber optic cable. And why do I read it? Why am I reading an article in the Wall Street Journal about this? Because high-speed traders need every edge they can get. And using, you know, very similar techniques and formulas, it makes a difference whether they're in first or out first from 1/1,000,000th of a second. And therefore, you know, it's funny because it used to be that people wanted to be near the New York Stock Exchange because it was quicker information flows if the wire was shorter, believe it or not. And then with technology, people began to move to New Jersey. But with these types of innovations, you can be probably any place in the country, maybe even further out of the country, and get an edge. And what I think this also shows is how crazy trading is today, where 1/1,000,000th of a second can make a difference in results.
Yeah, and it's true. And I think all of us during this COVID time, as more and more people are working from home, are realizing the faster your internet connection, even if it's not something for trading, but just for everyday business, you know, the faster it is, the easier and more efficient you can become.
You know, but I, you know, imagine like I used to do, sit around and spend my time analyzing companies and looking at cash flows and looking at return on capital. And now you have a good chunk of the investment community worried that their high fiber network isn't going to beat the guy next door by 1/1,000,000th of a second. It's like two different worlds out there of investing. The next article from the Wall Street Journal this Saturday is called "Buy a Tiny Slice of Tesla for Just a Dollar." And the article talks about two developments, one of which we've actually talked about already, and that is fractional share trading. And there are several brokerage firms that are now permitting investors to buy a piece of a share. Some of these, you know, some of the shares today, whether it's Tesla or Berkshire, are selling at such a high price that many people can't even afford to buy one share. And so they're breaking up the shares so that people can pay as little as $1 and buy a piece of a company. But the new thing is that the SEC has just approved a change for the first time in I don't know how long, the size of an odd lot and a full lot. And, you know, from my memory, a full lot was always 100 shares. And if you wanted to buy less than 100 shares, you had to pay a premium because somebody had to divide up that lot. And now they're changing the rules so that there are tranches where a round lot can be less than 100 shares if the price is above 250, and a different number if the shares are above $10,000. So they're democratizing, in a sense, the purchase of shares, so people, you know, can give a piece of a company that they like as a gift, or even if they don't have that much money, they could all participate by buying just a small piece.
You know, I think that it would be better if companies did what they'd always done and actually did stock splits when their share price became over $100. Now they start to become larger and larger shares, even with fractional shares. It starts to just become very complicated as you're dealing with a quarter of a share or a half of a share, as opposed to having the companies split their stock prices.
But, you know, it's funny. The other side of that is that Warren Buffett always wanted to keep his price stock high to avoid non-sophisticated investors, because he wanted to take the long-term view and didn't want
B share.
Sorry?
I said even Warren came out with the B share from the E share.
Right. So he didn't want to democratize his ownership. The next article is called Holding Women Back. And you may want to speak to this, Diane, but it is about how women are still behind men in terms of taking charge of their investment future and or investment responsibilities. And the article talks about, first of all, and I didn't realize this is a factor, but the article says that, quote, women have less room for error on big financial decisions. Quote, we tend to live longer, get paid less, and go out of the workforce sooner. And therefore, it's really important for them to make sure that their retirement plans make sense. And multiple studies have shown that when women do take the reins of investment decisions, they outperform men. This is interesting. They outperform men by 1 or 2 percentage points on average. And among the other issues, a comprehensive study by BCG found that wealth management industry is still missing the mark when it comes to meeting the needs of female clients. Among the issues, 30% of women surveyed said that BCG, they believe advisors speak to them differently because of their gender. In one blatant example, a wealthy woman who was a high earner told us about an advisor who during the first meeting spoke primarily to her husband and then sent the follow-up documents addressed only to him. She received the charm bracelet. So I think the lesson here is you should have a woman financial advisor. Don't you think so?
I agree. that, you know, many men can do a really great job with women clients, and many of my partners, I completely agree. But as an industry, we fall down because it's there is that stereotype that the male controls all the money, and that isn't the way it's headed in the future. And so unless our industry starts to make changes and realize that, they're going to continue to offend women like in that article.
And the final article for today is Model Portfolios Grow in Popularity. Model portfolios are ready-made fund combinations delivered through financial advisors and brokerage firms to everyday investors. And what many investment advisors apparently have been doing is creating these packaged model portfolios so that they can easily provide an investor with a pre-packaged, specifically designed portfolio that's appropriate for them. And it the article says that model portfolios took in so much money this year that they're nearly 30% of the total amount of assets managed through U.S. financial advisors. So what do you think of that, Diane?
So it depends on what their definition of model portfolios are. You know, and when you look at like a firm like mine, where we have 10 people, it's a boutique firm, we're looking at, we're combing through all the investments and making decisions. And model portfolios are, you know, are in fact a part of it in that we have an offering and this is what we follow. You can't follow every stock and be an expert at it. So you have to whittle it down some in some way to make portfolios that are balanced, diversified, and can speak to investors.
I think, and I'll speak without knowing, I think what they're talking about here is when they have a very big firm with, you know, thousands of financial advisors, many of whom are trained as salespeople, they need to prepackage what you at Arlington Financial do specifically for the clients.
So when you're talking about major firms, what really those firms are doing is they're trying to limit their liability by providing portfolios to more salespeople than actual investment advisors so that they have that account that is already diversified, created by somebody who is an investment manager, and the sales force is just selling it.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner.
And we are speaking with Ashley Transky, owner of Duo Catering and Events. And I don't know about you, but it's making me hungry, even though I just had lunch, because I'm on his website looking at all of his scrumptious food that I want to order. So Ashley, tell us, how were you drawn to cooking? And tell us your story of what got you passionate about food and sustainability.
Well,
I guess that's kind of a two-part. So I've always enjoyed cooking. I mean, that was from the time I was a small child. I found myself in the kitchen, primarily with my mother. My dad was also actually quite a good cook, though. And I was just always a happy place. And it was always a place that I would go and watch and you know, really play with food. It was always in the back of my mind that that was something that I would pursue, but it was always something I thought I would pursue later in life. You know, I worked in restaurants all through high school. I worked in restaurants through college. But honestly, through college, I was a psych major. I was honestly thinking I would pursue an advanced degree in psychology and carry on with that. But I did find that I kept being drawn back to kitchens and back to restaurant work. And that was the one place that was always an enjoyable place to be. So at some point, and this was probably 20, 25 years ago, I just made the decision to jump full-time into restaurant work. And I ended up in Park City, Utah. I guess a quick backstory prior to that, I was always East Coast. I was born in the Southeast. I did Georgia, Kentucky, Texas, spent a stint up in New England, and then slowly started moving west after college. And really, once I found, you know, the warmth and the sunshine of the West, there was really no going back. So Park City was a good gateway into full-time restaurant work. And then in the year 2000, I came out to Park City, out to Santa Barbara. And that's where I met my current business partner, Brian Congdon. And the two of us met at Sage and Onion here in Santa Barbara. And we've been cooking together for the last 20 years. And it's really been kind of an amazing partnership. And then, sorry about that.
And
getting into really once I arrived here, you start to see the advantages of living in a climate such as this. I mean, we start seeing, you know, I started going to the farmers markets, and I'd always seen farmers markets, I'd always gone, but they were so, you know, hit and miss throughout the year. Whereas we're in a place that, you know, we're at the markets 2 or 3 days a week, and we can drive out to the farms. We can talk to the farmers and see what is being grown, what's coming up next. You know, what are they excited about? And that's really where the menu development comes in. And that's really what's kept it interesting and exciting day after day to keep going to work, because there's always something new to play with. There's always something new you're thinking forward on, you know, what can we do with this? So that's where we started to get into more of the local, organic, sustainable. And it was more of a byproduct of actually working directly with the farmers and just seeing, you know, what are they growing? How are they growing it? And what can we do with it?
You know, when you talk about working in a restaurant, it seems that after you develop all of the food, it's sort of boring. You know, you're just doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah,
whereas what you do is every day is a new menu. And I guess that has to be quite different from that sort of, it seems to me, drudgery. Now, I'm not a chef, so maybe it isn't, but it seems that working in a restaurant puts a lot of constraint on it, on the chef.
Well, it does. When, you know, you mentioned Sage and Onion originally, that was the first restaurant I was here in town, and we would change that menu quarterly. And yes, that would get, at some point, you're just doing the same thing day in and day out. It was a bit painful. Where I found that what would become a little more interesting, we would have clients that would come in that would be, say, vegetarian, and they would come in several days a week. So we would be coming up with something new for them off menu. And so suddenly that would be our creative outlet. That would be something that, oh, this is fun to do. The next restaurant we went into was a place called Quantum here in town, if you remember that. But we had a little area there where a chef was actually in the dining room and it was working a cold line. And that was something, it actually allowed for a lot more creativity, because it allowed for just taking the products that we had on hand and making new things on a daily basis. Or even throughout the night, just making different things for different tables. And that was actually very exciting. That was actually allowing for much more creative expression. And that was actually a big concern when we were leaving the restaurant world and going into catering, because the thought of making, you know, filet mignon and salmon every day for the next 20 years was a nightmare. I just really, it was a disturbing thought. And that's from the beginning, we decided to approach our business more like a small restaurant. And in doing so, to create new menus, really for each new event, we would try to come up with something new. And that's what makes it, you know, fun to still go to work every day.
And so now in today's environment of COVID, where event work is basically nothing, you know, it's now you're looking at more of a creating menus for individualized families. How has that shifted your business? And what do you see that doing? You know, have there been any good outcomes from this time?
Honestly, there's been, it's been an amazing growth time for us. I do think once we come out of the COVID situation, I think we'll have a much stronger company. You know, we had to quickly pivot into, you know, more of a marketplace, more of a restaurant is really what we had to turn into. And so in doing so, it has forced us to continue to create, you know, new menus at least weekly, but if, you know, more two or three times a week, we've got something new going. And we have so many direct requests from, you know, instead of just having a handful of clients a month, you know, we have, you know, 50, 60, 70 a week that are constantly asking for something new. And, you know, I think that's driving us to continue to grow and continue to expand the operation and see what else we can come up with. I'm not sure if I answered your question there, if I just danced around.
You did. So it's just allowed you to become more creative and really focus on the business as opposed to the next event, which, you know, this time of year, I'm sure you would be slammed on a normal non-2020 year.
Exactly. We'd be, this time of year, normally I can barely come up for air. And this is allowing us to pick and choose a little bit more what we're doing. It is a lot harder because we are a very tight staff right now. So I'm actually in the kitchen much more than I ever would have been, which that's been actually a positive outcome as well for myself.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
The Turner Foundation here in Santa Barbara provides housing and financial support for low-income families, seniors, and those with special needs. The foundation is currently raising money for their holiday fund. Here's Donna Reeves.
So we started a holiday fund where people can donate to helping us to provide each of our families with monies for food and for gifts for the kids. So you can donate money on our website, which is www.theturnerfoundation.com, and go to the donate area, and any little bit helps. www.theturnerfoundation.com. All the monies that you donate to us are 100% tax deductible, or you can call here at the office, 805-730-1200, and ask for Donna, and I would be happy to take your information over the phone as well.
To donate to the Turner Foundation's holiday fund, go to theturnerfoundation.com or call 805-730-1200.
Community Alert, a positive preparation for disaster. It's designed to keep you informed about how to be prepared, not if, but when disaster strikes. Community Alert is heard Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. Community Alert, not if, but when disaster strikes.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Ashley Transke, the owner of Duo Events and Catering, and how he's pivoted during this COVID time to more of a marketplace where you can order dinners nightly or monthly or however often as you'd like. They even have a holiday menu up online, and they're still accepting orders for those of us who haven't planned far enough in advance. So thank you, Ashley, for being this really this resource for our community. And so when did you decide to pivot to become more restaurant-like in this online ordering and having people actually being able to dynamically order as opposed to the event way where you're ordering 6-8 weeks in advance? And how did you transition your business to accommodate a changing menu such as that?
We made the quick pivot in, it was probably March 13th. I mean, it was
day one.
Yeah, it was immediately. I will say we were fortunate in the light that we had this model in place about a year prior. We had started to try to roll it out. And we'd always had something in mind that as a caterer, you're always left with, you're always preparing more food than you need. You know, if we have an event for 500 people, you know, we probably have food for, you know, 600. And the thought is, how can we minimize that waste? What do we do with it? So early on, we decided to try to, you know, take that, the overages that we were preparing and sell it in a more of a marketplace setting. When it was something we didn't really need to do, we didn't put a lot of energy into it, and it really just trickled along. We didn't see a lot of traction with the community. But we already had more or less the framework for the website designed. So in March, when we were forced to stop doing events, we were able to quickly, you know, turn this back on and put all of our energy into it. And it's, you know, it became a much better product. But we were able to hit the ground running a lot quicker than I think other companies were. And it's allowed more or less us to keep, you know, our team in the kitchen working. You know, it's been us to keep the lights on, really. So that's trying to carry through until we can do events again. But it's been such an enjoyable and it's such a new arm of the business that I think it is something that we will continue on, you know, for years to come and just keep expanding upon it.
Do you think when the events come back online and you keep the marketplace open, that it will actually allow you to grow and be more profitable given the diversifying out the business more?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it'll do nothing but continue to grow. And this is the kind of thing that I think it will allow us to hire, you know, staff specifically to maintain this and just to keep it growing, grow the company a bit more. And it just allows us a little more flexibility, to say no to certain things as well. When you're just catering and that's the only business you're doing, you find yourself taking jobs that maybe you'd like to say no to sometimes. You're taking everything you can because you don't know what tomorrow brings. Whereas something like this, it allows a little bit more, you can project into the future a little bit with your numbers and seeing where things are going. I think that helps us. And I think that'll continue to help the company have some firmer footing.
So with the Congress looking like they reached a second stimulus package for the COVID economy, were you able to take advantage of the PPP loans that were offered in the winter? And did that help you stay online?
We were able to help to get a PPP loan, and absolutely that was really a lifeline. That's frankly the only reason we're still here, I think, right now. Or at least the only reason we're still here with the staff that we have. We certainly would have lost, you know, all of our employees. We were able to keep our crew on hand, you know, keep the machine running. We did take out an SBA loan at the same time. And that was also crucial to keep the operation running. So I think without the two of those, I'm not sure that we would be here right now.
Yeah, it sounds like in the next plan, it's a little, the details are a little squishy yet, hasn't really been clearly outlined. However, it does look like there's going to be some help for restaurants, is what I read in the Wall Street Journal's update today.
So I'm curious to see where that goes. I'm curious to see, because they're also looking to have some help for the event industry, which, you know, live music venues and things of that nature. Well, we're not a live music venue. We are very much so in the event world. That falls more into what we're allowed to do. Like I said, we did turn more into a restaurant style operation at this point, but the bulk of our business is, it's really, it relies on us being allowed to have, you know, large gatherings. So right. And we've seen 50 to 60% of our business just disappear. I mean, we've seen more than that, but as far as the revenue, we were able to make up at least half of that. But it's a struggle.
Now, what do you find that that's the Santa Barbara small city business environment is a good environment for a company like yours?
I do. I think the business community itself, I find fantastic. I feel like there are so many people that are willing to really bend over backwards and help you out. So I've found through the years that there's been so many, you know, not really, I guess, quote unquote competitors that I'm happy to reach out to, and they're always happy to lend a hand or lend a little bit of advice. I think that's been just crucial over the years. I find the city has really been, in my opinion, the city's been pretty great through all of this. I mean, they've been helpful. They've been trying to do what they can to kind of keep, you know, keep our operations, you know, as fluid as they can be. You know, we deal a lot with the health department, and, you know, they can be a little tricky sometimes, and they've really, I feel like they've gone above and beyond to try to make sure that, you know, we're able to continue to stay open and do the best we can. So yeah, I think overall I've been thrilled to work within the Santa Barbara community.
That's great to hear. And so, as you mentioned, your competitors or people in the same space as you, have you seen during COVID a coming together of the industry in terms of trying to help each other out?
Yeah, I think I guess within my small circle, absolutely. I think people are, you know, they're giving advice on, you know, what, you know, where have they been able to get loans? Where have they been able to, you know, reach out for certain assistance? You know, I've got, you know, staff, what can we do? You know, do you have help for them? Do you have something that, do you have work for them? And I think people have been pretty good about trying to help each other out.
That's great. So, when you look at the environment, and I'm sure many restaurants have closed or will close because they just through this, you know, really difficult 9-month period that we've experienced thus far. Do you see that there'll be some opportunity for some more growth, like potential plans of actually having a brick and mortar restaurant again, or are you happy with the marketplace and an events?
No, I do. We, you know, my business partner and myself have been, you know, we've been kicking the idea around. We have been looking a little bit at the idea of expanding into another brick and mortar space. I will be honest, it's the tough part with that is, you know, we are really just scraping by as it is right now. So the thought of just taking on, you know, another huge financial burden to you know, take a risk, you know, it's a little scary. So it's, you know, that's something that we're going to have to weigh it out and just see where that comes to play. But because it is, I will say, it is very difficult here in Santa Barbara to keep, you know, a retail operation going. And, you know, especially if you scale towards a higher end restaurant, I mean, your margins are so tight to begin with, and you're really competing for a very limited amount of dollars here in town. So it's, I don't know, it's a frightening prospect.
Right. It's a passion, a love, but it's also too somewhat scary. It's like jumping off without a parachute.
Exactly.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
If you have trouble handling your anger, get help. If someone you love is hurting or scaring you, get help. there is a full-service domestic violence agency in Santa Barbara County, which offers emergency shelter, counseling, transitional housing, anger management, and teen outreach programs. Its name is Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County. Call their 24-hour helpline at 964-5245. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County, putting an end to domestic violence.
Did you know that domestic violence sends more than 500 women and children to emergency shelters every year? There is a place where all family members affected by domestic violence can get help. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County, with four 24-hour phone lines to help. In Santa Barbara, call 964-5245. In Santa Maria, call 925-2160. In Lompoc, call 736-0965. And in Santa Ynez, call 686-4390.
Excuse me, I know you have a 9 o'clock, so I'll keep this short. I'm the business suit in the back of your closet. You wore me nearly every day before your office went, quote, casual. I used to be the CEO of your closet. Now I'm just that one intern no one ever talks to. I always thought you'd circle back with me, get granular, keep me in the pipeline. But nada, nothing. Don't you remember the McKittrick presentation? You spilled coffee on me and I still looked amazing during the breakout talkback Q&A. So, I think it's time for me to move on. I've got a great resume and I absolutely crush it in interviews, okay? Let's make this a clean break. Shift the paradigm. The only thing I ask is that you think outside the box here and do this. Take me to Goodwill, where I can really make a difference.
Your donations to Goodwill create new jobs, training programs, and education assistance for people in your community. To find your nearest donation center, go to goodwill.org. Donate stuff. Create jobs. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about. Hey, you know, I've been watching this show on Netflix called Somebody Feed Phil. Ashley, have you seen that show?
I can't say I have.
So, well, it's got 4 years so far, and it's hosted by a guy named Phil, who was the showrunner of Everybody Loves Raymond, and he's a foodie. And what he does is very high quality. It's, you know, produced with, you know, 15 and crew. They go to different countries and they eat. And he's funny, so it makes it interesting. But the amount of, you know, food that is being developed across the world is just amazing. That, you know, you talked about you would be sick of making salmon and steak, but if you look across, and I'm sure you're familiar with a lot of these trends, there is so much going on in the world about interesting food that I guess you could be looking at that and changing your menu every couple of hours.
There's so much happening with food right now that's, you know, the reinterest in fermentation, and, you know, everyone's, you know, what can you do with your byproducts? How can you take that and expand upon your menu with it? There's been so much actually with people just trying to limit waste coming out of their kitchens, and, you know, things that historically have been thrown away, you're suddenly realizing, like, you know, we could put that could be a made item on a plate. And that's exciting.
Well, you know, we have a food crisis here. You know, people are hungry, and, you know, what can we do? You know, we are worried about whether or not there's enough fish to go around with Puttanesca sauce today at Duo, but there are people who really need help. Is there anything you suggest that people can do to help people who need food?
Well, there's so much you can do. I'll get into a few things here. That actually leads me directly into very early on in the pandemic. This starts back in March. A friend and I were talking, and our kids were going to Roosevelt School, and the conversation came to the point that 40% of the school were living below the poverty line, and how many of them were receiving the meals they were receiving at school. So once schools shut down, I started worrying, you know, are they still getting fed, or where is this food coming from? Because that's one thing that I've found I've never had a shortage of. And especially with what I do, I mean, we always have more food than we know what to do with. We started a program called Duo More,
And that has, we've been reaching out, you know, we've been working with Calm families, we've been working with storytellers, and we're trying to get food to different families that have some level of food insecurity. You know, over the years, we always have an excess of food. You know, we go to the transition house. We you know, make deliveries there. There are so many places in town that you can actually, you know, you can work with a food bank. There are just some amazing organizations out there that are desperately in need of help. And, you know, whether it be financial help or if you have foodstuffs to give. And I mean, it's a little tough for people because certain areas you can only give canned goods, or you can only give, you know, things that are very shelf stable. I will say a place like the Transition House is much more forgiving in what they'll take. And I believe they have people on staff and they've got a working commercial kitchen that I think is able to handle things a little bit better. And I found that there are so many things that we can bring to them that we can't necessarily bring other places, and know that, you know, we've just dropped off enough to feed 100 people. And that's, you know, that always makes me happy to think that it's going there instead of just getting wasted, which is often the case.
So during this pandemic, did you ever have a problem with your supply chain? I realize your fruits and vegetables from the farmer's market, so probably not there, but what about your meat and dairy?
I honestly never had a problem with that. I mean, as you mentioned, the produce was no problem. I mean, initially we just, instead of going to the farmer's market, we were driving directly to the farms. And at that point, they also had such an excess because their markets had been shut down, so they didn't know what to do with it. So we were taking van loads of produce and distributing that throughout Santa Barbara. Our meat supply really never, you know, there were things like pricing structures changed a bit and everything. I mean, daily pricing is going higher on almost everything we're using. That's, you know, that's been a little concern. It's trying to keep up with that and, you know, make sure that we're not, you know, losing money on products going out. But, you know, overall, our food supply chain has been really unhindered.
And so, you know, I've been spending this segment basically telling everybody, I've been looking at all your delicious pictures online, but let's tell them where to go to. So it's duoevents.com. So it's D-U-O events, EVENTS.com. If you want to check out their offerings for tonight or tomorrow night, or even Christmas and Christmas Eve dinner. Now, when is your cutoff for the holiday ordering?
Cutoff is tomorrow, you know, end of the day tomorrow.
End of day tomorrow?
Yeah.
So end of day on Tuesday, and you could have all of your delicious meal taken care of for you.
We try to make it painless.
So. So when I came here 22 years ago from New York, my New York friends asked me, how is the food? And I said, it's really sort of a great paradox. The quality of the food is fantastic. Restaurants are really mediocre. I couldn't understand why. It's right near LA where the food is fantastic. But with all the ingredients, the food just didn't measure up. Which is so interesting. It's improved dramatically, I guess you would say that as well as I, and you would know better. But I wonder what that was all about. And in fact, has food improved here?
It's certainly gotten more interesting. And I think that goes across the board in coastal California. But, you know, I've thought about that a lot over the years because that was something I really struggled with when, you know, I came here in 2000 and, you know, really... Just to your point, I mean, just thinking that, you know, you go to New York, you go to LA, you go to San Francisco, and there's all these amazing things happening. And then you felt like you came to Santa Barbara, that you're here in the American Riviera, you've got wine country, you've got all the key components are in place. And it just seemed like it was just a big missing link. And I really feel like, and from working in restaurants over the years, part of that had to do with the clientele. And I say, and what they're willing to spend and what they were looking for here in town. And, you know, someone might, you know, they live here, they've got the disposable income to go out and dine. And if they were in New York, they had no problem spending top dollar on something if they were in San Francisco or LA, but it felt like they would go downtown Santa Barbara and they were looking for a much simpler item and just weren't, you know, it was a lot tougher to sell, you know, a higher end product. And I think that's limited what certain restaurateurs were able to do. And I do think part of it was also a little complacency and people just thinking like, it's working with what we're doing. We've got a captive audience to some degree. And I do think that has changed a bit.
I almost feel though, like when you look at downtown Santa Barbara, it's as if everybody hires the same restaurant consultant. And all of a sudden we go from having no Indian restaurants to like 15 new Indian restaurants, or no pizza places to 15 pizza places. And I think to myself, you know, what is happening there? Because 15 will never survive, right? And so why does that keep happening? And what can we do to change that phenomenon?
I don't know if that's just here though. That's just that you'll see trends and just people jump on the bandwagon, and it just, you know, the ones that do it really well or in the right location might see it through. Others are just going to fall by the wayside. But I see that everywhere. I mean, there's days I'll go to San Francisco and I'm looking for something new to eat, and menu after menu after menu, it's the same menu. I mean, it's really, it's almost like it's the same concept. They're just changing it up a little bit.
Like,
So it's, I don't think it's unique to Santa Barbara. I think that's just, you know, it's a worldwide phenomenon, really.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
Hope you enjoyed your meal. And I just want to say, he's lucky to have a brother like you.
Lucky? Caring for my brother is far from easy. But he's a part of me, like my arms and legs, so I'll be his. No time for tired. Nothing can disable this love. He needs me, but I'm the lucky one, even though I need help now and then.
If you're caring for a loved one, visit aarp.org/caregiving for care guides and community. Support for your strength. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. Ashley, I have to ask you, why do most chefs have tattoos on their arms?
Did you just ask if they have tattoos on their arms?
Yeah, I mean, you look at like the show I talked about before that no one seems to care about, Somebody Feed Phil. Every chef in every country, including what's his name, Bourdain, are full of tattoos. Is that sort of a cultural thing to be a chef? You have to get tattoos?
Well, that's oddly enough, my business partner and I don't have any tattoos. And I've joked that we need to get at least some of the fake, you know, the kids' tattoos that you can kind of, you know, just press on, just to add ourselves a little bit of credibility. But no, that's a great question. I think it's, you're spending a lot of time with your sleeves rolled up and staying in one place. So maybe it's just, and you're wearing kind of the same uniform every day. So that's one outlet of expression, perhaps.
This is a real important question. I mean, we want to, we want to have a show on this.
Yeah. So on the break, Ashley, you were telling us that, you know, a lot of the magazine or catalog shoots that everybody gets in their mail, whether it be, you know, Pottery Barn, Crate and Barrel, whomever the catalog comes from, a lot of those shoots happen here in Santa Barbara, and that's a segment of your business as well. So how has that changed during COVID? And I'm glad to hear that it's still happening.
Yes. I mean, they've been a lifeline at this time as well, which has been nice. There's been a lot of backlash on actually any of these productions going on because, you know, a restaurant can't let someone sit and dine, yet they've got a crew of people that are sitting and eating. And, you know, I found it's interesting how that's changed over this pandemic. And really what we're doing is you're finding yourself packing individual meals and bringing it, you know, with dietary restrictions labeled and whatnot, that the client's name, so they can just go and pick it up, grab it, and you know, it's very minimal contact. And even they set up dining areas for their staff or the crew that are working. And, you know, they'll have a 6 or 8 foot table with, you know, two seats, one at either end. And, you know, at most you'll have those two people sitting at a table. I mean, oftentimes what we were seeing is there'd be one person sitting at a table, and, you know, they were keeping it very well spaced, and it was impressive.
How do you get business like that? Do you need special contacts?
It's been a lot of word of mouth over the years. And once you get in with one crew, that they just remember you, the producer will call as they're setting up for next year. Location companies a lot of times will reach out or make a recommendation. So that's, we've been doing this long enough now that we do see the same, you know, the same company will be coming back year after year.
Well, I have to say a lot of the catering and event business is word of mouth business. And I think, Ashley, you've done a really great job at your reputation in town is very good and your food is delicious. And I think that also helps in getting that repeat business. And I think once events come back online, you'll probably find yourself more busy than you even want to be.
That's the hope. I mean, we've been fortunate and it has all really been word of mouth. I mean, early on 20 years ago, or 16 years ago, we started the company. We did do some print advertising, and I felt it did very little for us other than add a little bit of, you know, we were in Santa Barbara Magazine and some of the print publications like that. I think it made people more comfortable when they would look and see us in print and think, oh, okay, it adds a little bit of legitimacy. But honestly, it is 10 times more valuable to have someone try your food at an event or, you know, picking it up and trying dinner at someone's house. That's really where our business continues to come from.
Yeah, make sure that all your servers have business cards to hand out.
That's something I'm terrible about, but that's a good point.
Yeah. So two things before we go. Number one, I think it's important for you to get a tattoo. And number two, I think it's important as soon as this is over to get down to the store and make sure my dinner is ready.
Ashley, thank you so much for your time today, and we really appreciate it. And we encourage everyone to go to duoevents.com and order some takeout.
Thank you for listening. You've been listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
It's 3.